Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. The snow is likely to continue on and off, although it's predicted mostly for the morning today, with some chance of snow tonight, and the sun is expected to start coming out again on Saturday. But it's going to be cold, with wind chill as low as minus 20 degrees. Temperatures will climb slowly during the week to come. Sunday will be sunny, and it should get up into the 20s, but it does not look like we will get up to the 30 degrees in the coming week. It's Friday, so here's a roundup of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune from Dennis Hart.
It was a really busy week for news on the pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers, and it began with the story that everyone was talking about, that big crash in the snow on Interstate 35, Monday afternoon that killed one person on I-35 and closed the interstate between 13th Street and Highway 30. As many as five people were seriously injured and rushed to the hospital, and many more minor injuries were reported. At least 50 vehicles were involved. Story County Sheriff's Captain Barry Thomas said he'd never seen a pileup this severe in his quarter century in law enforcement. Dozens of people were transported to the Ames City Auditorium at City Hall after the crash. The American Red Cross also went to the auditorium to interview crash survivors. The interstate crash was the largest accident in a busy Monday for law enforcement authorities, as a winter storm moved across the region, dumping as much as 7 inches of snow in Ames. The sheriff's office alone responded to as many as 60 accidents. There were more than 30 accidents inside the Ames city limits. Ames Police Commander Jeff Huff called it an Armageddon out there. At one point, traffic was stopped on Ontario Street between Highland Avenue and Stang Road for about 30 minutes because slick roads prevented drivers from getting up the incline. There was, of course, other news in Tuesday's trip, including word that the biggest funding source for the potential Healthy Life Center in Ames would come from private donations. That information came Monday night during a meeting at the Ames Public Library when consultants from RDG Planning and Design presented their study on the conceptual center to members of the City Council, the Board of Supervisors, Mary Greeley Medical Center's Board of Trustees, and the Heartland Senior Services Board of Directors. Those four entities, along with Iowa State and the Des Moines Area Community College, are potential partners in the project. The planning study said the cost to build and equip the Healthy Life Center would come in at nearly $49 million. Under the suggested funding breakdown, the City of Ames would contribute $17 million, Mary Greeley Medical Center would kick in $7 million, Heartland would contribute $3.5 million, and Story County would contribute $3 million. Altogether, those contributions would equal 63% of the project's total cost. The other 37%, $18 million, would come from private donations. A three-person committee will lead the fundraising effort. Former Ames Mayor Ann Campbell, and Bevan Warren Madden, two longtime and well-known Iowa State administrators. That committee will come back before the boards and councils in August to update everyone on the effort. The Healthy Life Center would sit at the northwest corner of Ontario Street and Shoal Road, land owned by Iowa State that the university would sell for the project. The center would include a variety of entities. An aquatic center would be located on one side of the building, including a lap swimming pool, water slides, a therapy pool, and a recreation pool. A gymnasium would sit at the back of the building, and workout equipment would occupy some of the second floor. The plans also include a demonstration kitchen, an indoor play area for children, a conference room, physical therapy facilities, and a designated space for Heartland Senior Services. Also Tuesday, a story about the Nevada man who was arrested in connection with the death of his infant daughter. The Tribune reported that 29-year-old Calvin Curtis White allegedly admitted he placed pillows over the little girl to prevent hearing her cry. He was arrested last Friday and charged with first-degree murder and child endangerment, and he could face life in prison. His arrest came several days after White was struck by a train in Nevada when he allegedly was walking on the northbound track. Authorities could not say whether there was a connection between the child's death and White's accident. Tuesday's trip also had word of the death of John Chitty, the founder of one of the most prominent garbage collection companies in central Iowa. He passed away Saturday at the age of 76. John Chitty was working part-time for a small garbage company in Ames in 1974 when he bought the company and started with one collection route and one truck. The company became known as Chitty Garbage Service. Also Tuesday, the Trib reported that the second finalist was named in the search for the next Iowa State Veterinary Medicine Dean. He is Dan Grooms from Michigan State University. Grooms is professor and chair of the Department of Large Animal Clinical Sciences at Michigan State's College of Veterinary Medicine. He is in the running to replace former Iowa State Dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine, Lisa Nolan. She left to take over as the next dean of vet med at the University of Georgia. Grooms was scheduled to visit Iowa State this past Tuesday and Wednesday. The first finalist, Spencer Johnson of the University of Georgia, visited campus a week ago. The name of the third and last candidate will be made public in about a week. Also in Tuesday's Tribune, word that the newly opened Fresh Time Farmers Market in Ames is launching a fundraising campaign called No Student Goes Without a Lunch. As of the end of last year, Ames students' negative lunch account balances total nearly $48,000. All Ames students receive lunch, regardless of their negative account balance, but the school district has to find ways to settle outstanding student balances. Fresh Time's new fundraiser will try to tackle those balances by asking customers to round up their grocery bills when checking out at the store between February 7th and the 28th. All customer donations will go to the Ames School District to pay students' negative lunch balances. Also Tuesday, word that Iowa State Student Union Board announced that hip-hop artist Fetty Wap will be the headlining artist at the new outdoor concert hosted by the organization this spring. That concert is set for April 22nd, and it will be open to ISU students and to outside community members. It will take place at the Molecular Biology parking lot on campus starting at 4 p.m. The event will take place rain or shine. The concert will have a capacity of 10 to 12,000 people, and it will be alcohol-free. Wednesday's Tribune reported that the use of DNA evidence has led to the arrest of a man in the year-old investigation into a sexual assault at Franklin Park in Ames. 23-year-old Devontes David Voits, formerly of Ames, is charged with first-degree sexual assault, first-degree kidnapping, and willful injury. He was arrested Tuesday at the Newton Correctional Facility, where he was behind bars on unrelated charges. In January of last year, a woman in her 20s was forcibly taken from her vehicle that was parked north of Franklin Park on the city's west side. She was dragged into the park and sexually assaulted. Ames Police Commander Jeff Huff called the woman, in his words, a true survivor, and praised her strength and perseverance. If convicted, Voits could face life in prison without parole. In another case, Ames police also reported Tuesday that a Sioux City man had been arrested after he allegedly broke into multiple apartments in West Ames over the weekend. In custody was 24-year-old Abdi Mohamed Ahmed. Also Wednesday, the Tribune identified the man who died in Monday's 50-vehicle pileup on Interstate 35, 53-year-old Dana Easter of Independence, Missouri. Authorities said Easter was driving a charter bus southbound on I-35 when he failed to slow down and rear-ended a vehicle, causing a chain reaction north of the Lincoln Overpass. No passengers were on the bus. I-35 was closed for several hours after the crash. Across the state, there were approximately 185 accidents that killed 8 people during Monday's snowstorm. Wednesday's Tribune also reported that the Ames School District has moved one step closer to building a new high school. The board approved a resolution ordering a special election to seek voter approval on a $110 million bond to finance that project, along with some elementary school renovations. Volunteers had been collecting signatures for petitions in favor of building the new school and expanding 3 elementary schools. 936 signatures were needed, and nearly 1,300 were collected. A special election on the bond issue will be held April 3rd. The school board also moved forward in its search for a new superintendent to replace the retiring Tim Taylor. This month, a search firm will meet with teachers, students, parents, and others to determine their thoughts about the next superintendent. Today, Friday, is the deadline for community members to take a superintendent search survey, and March 19th is the deadline for submitting application materials for the position. It's estimated that about 70 candidates from around the nation will complete applications. The top candidates will be brought in for a first round of interviews in the middle of April. Also Wednesday in the Tribune, word that the Story County Board of Supervisors unanimously approved a revised and less expensive plan to improve the county animal shelter. The new plan would cost $368,000, down from the $692,000 plan the supervisors rejected last December. The new plan includes cheaper costs for improvements to the electrical system and to the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. 2 expensive improvements were removed from the December plan, $110,000 for the large animal addition and $59,000 for paving the staff parking lot. Large animals will be housed in the existing shelter at 975 West Lincoln Way in Nevada. But Animal Control Director Sue McCaskey said holding large animals, such as livestock, inside the shelter could increase the amount of vermin in the facility. The supervisors also approved a motion to partner with the City of Ames, Iowa State, and the county's E911 Service Board to approve Phase 2 of replacing the countywide radio communication systems. Law enforcement officers and first responders in the county use the system, which has exceeded its lifespan and needs replacing. The new system is expected to cost around $8 million, which would be split between the different jurisdictions. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, word that Iowa State administrators are looking at ways to improve graduation rates for disadvantaged college students. The university is trying to figure out how to close gaps in graduation rates for students from different backgrounds. It's been working with the University Innovation Alliance to increase graduation rates for students who are low-income or first-generation students and students of color. UIA has 11 members, all public universities, and hopes to graduate more than 68,000 students by 2025 by sharing information and methods between member institutions. 952 low-income students received bachelor's degrees from ISU in the 2012-2013 school year. That was the first year Iowa State reported to the UIA. That number rose to nearly 1,900 students in the 2016-2017 school year. ISU and other schools in the program have adopted so-called predictive data to determine which students are at higher risk of dropping out before it happens. University staff members are also developing an inventory to define what student success means across different departments. One more note from Wednesday's trip, State Representative Beth Wessel-Crochelle of Ames has introduced a bill in the state legislature to fund the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State, 1 year after lawmakers stripped it from the state budget. The bill would match private donations to the center with up to $1 million in state funds. In Thursday's Tribune, word that the Ames Police and Fire Departments plan to add more to their ranks in their coming fiscal year. A new firefighter will serve on a fill-in capacity in the department, while the extra police officer will join the Ames Police Safe Neighborhoods team. That word came during budget presentations at the Ames City Council on Wednesday night. If the council approves it, the fire department's fire suppression and emergency action budget will go up about 4% to about $305,000, while the police department's crime prevention and police services budget would increase about 5% to about $337,000. The council will meet next Tuesday for its budget wrap-up session, the final scheduled step before it certifies the city budget early next month. Also Thursday, word that a bill that would help clear up legal language in Iowa's law that prevents prosecutors from pursuing more serious charges and lengthier sentences for hit-and-run defendants passed through the Iowa House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday. That is one step further than where the bill was this time last year. The bill is named after Emily Jacobs, an Iowa State freshman who was struck and killed by a Cyride bus while she was crossing Ash Avenue at Lincoln Way in 2015. The bus driver was charged with leaving the scene of a personal injury accident and failure to obey a traffic control device. He pleaded guilty to the lesser charge of failing to report an accident after a judge ruled that prosecutors must prove he knew he struck someone at the time of the accident to pursue the more serious charge. Also Thursday, the Trib reported that the Ames man, who police say sexually assaulted a minor, is set to plead guilty at a hearing next week. Authorities said 22-year-old Chris Samart Kiochai is expected to plead guilty to lascivious acts with a child. The incidents allegedly occurred in 2015 and 2016. Thursday's Trib also reported that the City of Ames is seeking volunteers to serve on city boards and commissions. There are 20 separate boards and commissions to choose from, and the deadline to apply is next Friday. And one more note from Thursday's Trib, the Ames High School 2018 musical Babes in Arms will go on stage tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. The plot centers around a group of young theater apprentices working to showcase a new review. In this week's Nevada Journal, a report on the first Coffee with Council Time meeting that took place at Nevada's Farm Grounds Coffee Shop on Main Street. It was the brainchild of newly elected council member Dane Nielsen as a way for city leaders to increase communication with residents. The goal is to always have a couple of council members or the mayor present from 9 to 10 o'clock on at least two Saturday mornings a month. Mayor Brett Barker and Nielsen were there for the first meeting last Saturday. Coffees with Council will generally be held on Saturdays following Monday's council meetings, which take place on the second and fourth Mondays of each month. Also in this week's journal, a feature story about American Heart Health Month, as told through the experiences of a Nevada woman who suffered a heart attack and lived to talk about it. It's a compelling read in the journal. Another compelling read is the long takeout on the new mayor of Ames, John Hala. The story talks about Hala's background, his family, his career, and why he decided to run for mayor in Story County's largest community. It's in this week's Nevada Journal. In this week's Boone News Republican, the trial for the Boone woman, who police say admitted stabbing a man multiple times, killing him, then leaving his body in the house for 2 days while she did daily chores, has been set for April 24th. 59-year-old Mary Myers is charged with first-degree murder in connection with the death of 65-year-old Joe Worth. If she's convicted, she faces life in prison. Also in the News Republican, the Boone County Board of Supervisors heard from officials of the Beaver Creek Watershed Authority about the possibility of the county contributing money to help the organization apply for a grant. The grant money would be used for such things as conservation buffer strips in the creek areas and public education projects. The supervisors took the request under advisement. The News Republican also reported that the Boone Public Safety and Transportation Committee heard that traffic accidents have declined at the intersection of South Lynn and Hawkeye Drive since lighting was installed in the area. That lighting went in after a fatal accident occurred at the intersection several years ago. In this week's Story City Herald, the big news was that voters rejected Roland Story's school bond measure on Tuesday. That measure needed 60% approval to pass. Instead, 68% of those who voted said no. The $5.3 million measure would have helped fund a $500,000 renovation of the high school auditorium and construction of a $7 million football and track facility at the site of the Outlet Mall in Story City, which closed last October. School Superintendent Matt Patton said, in his words, "Obviously, we are disappointed. However, we will continue to search for solutions that the community can support." Also in this week's Herald, word that the Roland Story parent-teacher organization Carnival will take place Friday, February 23rd, at the Roland Story Elementary School. Funds raised at the carnival are used to buy classroom technologies, field trips, and other needs not covered by school money. And that is your weekly summary of news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers. I'm KHOI Civic Reporter Dennis Hart, wishing you a healthy and safe weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, for that roundup of local news for the past week from the pages of Ames Tribune. You can read more at amestribune.com. If you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI. I am your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for listening. The React Gallery at Iowa State University is a visual exhibition space for exploring and interacting with current event issues that are relevant to the ISU community. It is located in Ryman Gallery at the Christian Peterson Art Museum at Morrill Hall. Exhibitions in this space are opportunities to interact and also for action to be taken beyond the gallery after seeing exhibits there. KHOI reporter Joy B. went to check out their first exhibit of the year.
The first React exhibit this year opened on January 22nd, and it addressed the issues of violence and assault specifically through the lens of the Green Dot program. The Green Dot program is a violence prevention program started at ISU in July, whose mission is to decrease power-based personal violence on campus through education outreach to increase awareness and bystander intervention skills. The program teaches people in the proximity who witness violence to respond and help with prevention. The exhibit currently on display at Morris Hall is a collaboration between the Green Dot Program and University Museums at Iowa State. It features works of art owned by Iowa State. Yesterday, I spoke with Jasmine Brooks, the Violence Prevention and Green Dot Coordinator at ISU Student Wellness Center, about the exhibit. I started out by asking Jasmine to describe how the exhibit connects with the mission of Green Dot.
Green Dot's to create culture change on campus. We empower people to be active bystanders in scenarios that may lead to sexual violence or relationship violence, stalking, harassment, those types of things. And there's also engagement pieces, which is kind of what the museum is utilizing spaces that people can engage with the topic.
So do you feel that this exhibit will help the Green Dot program?
Yes, I mean, so far it has. Like in the first week, we had 150 visitors, so that's pretty neat.
Can you describe some of the art pieces?
They're all varied in size, which I think is great. The smallest one we have is a sculpture, and it has a polar bear with its head stuck in a rock. It really framed around thinking about barriers. There's one that I remember vividly. It looks like a basket with little tiny people in them, and it's kind of reflective of like how everyone plays a part. It looks like they're creating it or building it. There's another large one that you have to look at from a distance. It's a room with multiple spaces, black and gray and white. Contemplation is a sculpture. The person's split in half. One side is very intricate with colors, vibrant colors, textures, patterns. The other side is very plain, and it shows that the person can be very complicated. Thoughts can be very complicated. How it, you know, reflects and expresses externally can be complicated. Homage to Selena looks very colorful. That one is unique because we, again, wanted to have representation. It's a skeleton dancing. The story of Selena really plays into heart of acquaintance issues. When we have friends that are very close to us that harm us, those things we don't ever address because they're our friends. All of the pieces, you'll be able to look at a label that talks about the piece itself, like what it is. The person who designed it may have had a quote just so that people understand like their frame of reference. After that, it's how we have connected it to Green Dot. And then it's always a question to either think about or to, you know, write on the Green Dot and then stick it on the wall. And then we have the Me Too section. So there's stories. We have a few videos running. And then there's a place where you can take a picture because I think it's very great to have something to take back with you to be able to share with other people. And then there's a giant eye that is a makeshift brick wall. We want people to interact of, you know, sticking those green dots on there. So And I think what's really great, Parks Library has created a reading list. So if people are interested in these topics, how can they learn a little bit more, that's available to them. And then also we have a worksheet that they can learn about how they can get involved, whether it's doing the trainings or coming to some of the programs that we'll be having throughout the semester. So that's kind of what the space looks like. It's very like laid out. There's no real way of kind of navigating the space. I think it's what you gravitate to and just kind of looking at the art for what it is and processing it.
Would this be of interest to the community?
I believe so. It is open to the public. When I talk to people who have experienced some form of violence, they are comforted in the fact that people are learning a little bit more about it. Art is just always a healthy, easy, safe way, doesn't require much from people. So I think it fits all of the pieces that we want Green Dot to embody. I mean, it's just the easy thing to connect to. It doesn't point fingers. It doesn't say someone's more responsible than others. It says that we're all responsible. And I think that's really great that people are, you know, finding their role in it little by little. So I'm very positive and hopeful. I think it's just very unique community we're building around this program.
Can you give us the dates and times that people can come to see the exhibit and the location?
Yeah, so it is in the Christian Peterson Center in Morrill Hall. I believe they're open from 11 to 4. The exhibit ends next Friday, the 16th. Again, it's 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We have a few updates about what KHOI is doing and some of our newest projects. Our engineer, Rebecca Reuter, is here. And Rebecca, why don't you read the first announcement about KHOI's new project with Iowa State Daily?
Sure. We have an announcement about a collaboration with KHOI and the Iowa State Daily Media Group. We have partnered to initiate a pilot program training Iowa State students in audio production, including podcast and radio production, radio broadcast creation and engineering. Lawrence Cunningham, general manager of the Iowa State Daily Media Group, which specializes in experiential learning opportunities for students in media, graphic design, photography, and videography fields, says that the opportunity will give their students experience in a medium they can't get in traditional classroom projects. He says, quote, "We're continuously learning to not only Quote, "We're continuously listening to not only what our students want to learn, but also what kind of students employers want to hire. That's the intersection where we live as a business specializing in experiential learning, and it's the core mission behind this lab," end quote. KHOI, as you all know, is a non-commercial community-based radio station that features local programming in the arts, music, news, and public affairs. And we are offering Central Iowans personal access to mass media as radio guests, hosts, and technical broadcast operators. The Audio Lab is its newly developed audio production training service. 20 students have been partaking in this 10-week class this spring. Classes will take students through the entire creation process, from how to build audio content and run professional microphone and soundboards to legal, ethical, and diplomatic considerations, finally ending with distribution and broadcasting. The series will center on in-depth storytelling, kind of like This American Lifestyle, featuring Iowa State community members, which KHOI sees as direct extension of its community-based mission. Ursula Rudenberg, station manager of KHOI and current host, says, quote, "Our mission at KHOI has always been to provide the Central Iowa community with an intentional, thoughtful, and ethical space for self-expression within the context of learning and discussion. This audio lab is the next extension of that mission in inclusion of Iowa State students and community. We're excited about serving Iowa State students and collaborating with outside media and are eager to see where this takes us," end quote. Podcasts will be available for download and streaming by searching Iowa State Daily wherever you get your podcast, and we will be sure to make an announcement about that once it's all up and ready to go. Community members will also hear them by tuning into your favorite radio station, KHOI 89.1 FM. For more information, as always, go to khoifm.org. And if you want to contact us about further information, feel free to stop by the studio at 410 Douglas Avenue in downtown Ames, or you can call the station at 515-292-2878. Back to you, Ursula.
Thank you, Becca. And we're in the third week of the training program. We've done three classes out of, I think there's going to be 10 classes.
And ending in March.
In March. And we have about 20 students, including three administrators at the Iowa State Daily.
Yeah, they decided to be guinea pigs along with us, which is always a treat, in my opinion.
So that's one exciting thing. And the intention is then to extend the service to community members once we've gone through the pilot project. So stay tuned for more. And your Soundscape project is part of the Audio Lab as well.
Under the umbrella. So that's always exciting to take a little bit from Soundscape Labs and apply it to Audio Lab. Kind of makes me happy.
And Soundscape Lab is available to the public, and you are invited to join Rebecca in that every month, and we post regular announcements on the stations.
Always the last Wednesday of the month. The next one is February 28th. At 6 o'clock.
Okay. And Joy, you have a quick announcement to make, too. KHOI is involved with International Women's Day.
Yes. At the Ames Public Library on Sunday, March 4th, from 2 to 4 p.m. in the auditorium, they are having the theme of Press for Progress. Jemette Colton, local community leader and activist who emigrated from Chile as a young adult, will discuss her experiences pressing for progress. There will be time for conversation following the presentation. KHOI Community Radio will invite participants to record their thoughts. So for more information, you can go to www.amespubliclibrary.org.
KHOI will have a listening booth at the women's event, so we'll be recording people's thoughts and stories and feelings during the event. And again, that's March 4th, and we'll also have Jemette on KHOI's local talk on the 26th.
Right, Monday the 26th.
Monday the 26th. Okay.
It'll be fun.
Stay tuned for that, too. And Chris Martin has joined us. Hello, Chris.
Here I am.
Thank you. We spoke earlier about an exhibit at Morrill Hall. There is another exhibit, Amalgamation, that we wanted to bring to your attention that's also closing soon on February 17th. And it's happening at the Octagon. It's in the community gallery on the ground floor of the Octagon and features the work of Ames furniture artist Chris Martin. Your own creative expression has been influenced by the traditional crafts of Ghana, where you spent 2 years as a U.S. Peace Corps volunteer, and also in India, where you spent time as an artist in residence. And most recently as a Fulbright scholar?
That's it, yep.
So, Chris, not only is your own work in the exhibit breathtakingly beautiful, there's some very beautiful furniture in there, you should also in the exhibit share with us photos and text and actual artworks about artisans that you met work mm-hmm. with in Ghana and yep. India. Mm-hmm. And so recently we've heard disparaging characterizations of African countries from the U.S. president. So not to take his word for it, this is a great opportunity to get a sense of the country of Ghana through your eyes and experience since mm-hmm. you actually lived there. So would you give us a firsthand account here of some of the people that you feature in your show at the Octagon and how you knew them?
Okay. So, well, I guess the one I think most interesting and best story that kind of warms my heart is the coffin maker, Eric Ajitay Anang. I met him in late 2008. I was in Peace Corps from 2008 to 2010. And actually, I've been back 5 times since then. Met him. I spent a decent amount of time in my free time traveling around to the various craft villages in Ghana. And
are there a lot of craft villages?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So what is a craft village?
So basically, the culture in Ghana is there are villages where the entire village, in some way or another, are engaged in a specific craft, and that craft is, mm-hmm. you know. So in African culture, and I'll speak specifically to Ghanaian culture, is the arts are integral with their lives. It's not separate from. It's not put up on a wall and looked at or appreciated. It is definitely appreciated, but it's part of their culture. So, for example, the coffins, you know, so the original coffins, Eric, his grandfather was the one that started the tradition, and it's a more recent tradition, but started in the late 1940s, early 1950s, where his grandfather was a carpenter. He was making a palanquin for a chief.
A palanquin?
A palanquin. It's the way I explain it to my students is in Egyptian culture, the pharaoh gets carried around on a golden chair mm-hmm. on the shoulders of people. That's a palanquin.
Okay. So it's a movable throne.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. Except in Ghana, they were done in the shape of an animal that's like the spirit animal of the tribe. So
wow.
I want to say his grandfather was making a leopard for this chief. And the chief subsequently died before the palanquin got finished. So his grandfather suggested that they finish the palanquin and use it as a coffin to bury the chief. Then it became tradition to bury chiefs in basically in a palanquin. And mm-hmm. then that kind of started to spread in the culture as they people were more able to afford those kinds of things. So it's the Ga tribe in Ghana.
And how long has this been going on?
Since like 1950, 1951.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a very playful response to death.
Yeah. Yeah, uh-huh. It is. And as far as the rest of the culture, chiefs would be buried in a animal representing power like a leopard, a lion, an eagle, something like that. The other people, the normal rank and file would be buried, for example, a fisherman would be buried in a fish. Hmm. A cocoa farmer would be buried in a cocoa pod. So met him, befriended him early in my service and went back to visit him a number of times during my service. And then when I was back, I went back in 2013 to visit the artisans and actually explore the possibility of taking students over there, which we will be doing this May, actually. My wife and I will be taking students this May for the second time. He expressed his need of an apprentice. And while I was in Peace Corps, young kid, 14 years old at the time, Stephen Ansa, befriended me out of the blue and wanted me to teach him how to do woodworking. So I had a little workbench in my backyard where we lived in a village called Donkorkrom. And I basically taught him how to do some basic woodworking skills, and he took it from there. Now he is Eric's chief apprentice. So in 2013, he said that I didn't think of it. And then as I was on the plane flying back, it hit me that I could have Stephen working with him. So mm-hmm. now Stephen is working with him, and the bases of the tables that are over in the show were made by Stephen, which I think mm-hmm. is kind of a very cool that this kid that I taught how to do woodworking is now, in essence, kind of working with me on these pieces. So, yeah.
So you're still collaborating with them on a
Absolutely.
Going basis.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as the other group that I'm working with are in Ghana, are a group of brass casters. It's actually an entire community. There's not one specific person. And the village is called Kofofrom. It's south of Kumasi. And the poles that are on a cabinet over there, I had them make. And let's see, what else am I in Ghana? That actually – oh, and the kente cloth. So, again, I was working with a village on that project. Mm-hmm. And this is not a one-time thing. I mean, I will continue mm-hmm. to work with these artisans, and then I have a number of other artisans. I'm going back in May, and
you said you want to open up new markets for these artisans.
Yes.
How are you doing that?
Well, that – you know, so, again, in Ghana, India is actually – doing okay. Their government recognizes the value of traditional craft. Mm-hmm. Ghana, I think they do, but they don't quite know how to support it. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the crafts are dying. As Ghana, I argue, as Ghana is not necessarily modernizing but westernizing, they want to be more like us and they are turning it into a consumer culture, but they're consuming modern things and they're kind of putting the traditional mm-hmm. To the side. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the crafts are dying out. And the kids, you know, who 50 years ago would have, you know, their fathers were kente weavers so that they would become a kente weaver, it mm-hmm. would be assumed. But now they're leaving to go to the city to make money, mm-hmm. you know. And so a lot of the traditional crafts, kids aren't going into it. And a lot of it's dying out. So I kind of wanted to – and kind of beyond the work that I do, the – craft that I do, that was one of my things that I left Peace Corps with is how can I work with them to envision kind of alternative markets for their work.
So are you finding those here in the United States?
Here in the United States, mm-hmm. yeah. And this is kind of my first mm-hmm. stab at it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
the exhibit is at the Octagon in mm-hmm. the Community Gallery, which is at 427 Douglas.
Yep. Right across the street.
So you can just walk right in. Yeah. Across the street from
yep.
here. You can just walk right in from
yep.
the street.
Yep.
And it's up there until the 17th.
It is.
So you can see a lot of the work and you can see pictures of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Finally,
and there's a little explanation about each of the makers,
each of the
too.
Makers. Yep. Uh-huh. So, Chris, to wrap things up, how would you – you've been in Ghana quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's an African country.
Mm-hmm.
What are the words you would use to describe mm-hmm. Ghana?
Warm, loving, joyous, engaged, hot, humid.
And what was your kind of first thought when you heard the president's characterization?
I was heartbroken. I honestly – it was one of the – I was in shock. I really was. And, you know, for a person who's never been there, never been to the continent of Africa, to pass judgment on a place he doesn't know,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's a real problem that we have in culture today. You know, if you know, what did Mark Twain say? That travel is fatal to bigotry.
My experience in North Africa – was like everybody was so happy and smiling mm-hmm. and welcoming. Mm-hmm. You were mm-hmm. like a celebrity
yeah.
when I was
yeah.
there.
Mm-hmm. You know, if we could get more people with passports to visit these places, it would be a very different world, very different world.
Thank you for stopping mm-hmm. by. Really
Thanks
appreciate
for inviting
it.
Me.
And again, the exhibit is at the Octagon 427 Douglas,
mm-hmm.
open through January 17th. And there's a lot of your furniture work there.
Yeah.
And apparently the young apprentice in Ghana has
yep.
contributed to the work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Maria ma inagesuwa sangaria na sanukade. Andariana Senukade.
If you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. The ISU 2018 Symposium for Sustainability will be occurring at the Memorial Union on February 19th and 20th. Mary Rankin, Director of Sustainability for Iowa State and City of Ames, is here for her monthly check-in. Welcome back, Mary.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
And you brought some folks with you.
I did. I brought a couple of amazing students. I get to work with so many, so this is only two of them. But I brought two amazing students with me today to talk about some of the things that are going to be happening at this year's symposium that are specifically directed to students for students. And so joining me, I have Paige Myers, who is actually serving as one of my LiveGreen campus and community engagement interns this year and also serves as a liaison for the Green Umbrella Student Organization. That organization serves as an umbrella organization for all sustainability student groups at Iowa State University. And related to the Green Umbrella, we have one of the co-presidents, Leah Gomez, with us today.
Excellent. Well, you want to start the conversation?
I am happy to do that. Well, as you mentioned, the symposium is coming up the 19th and 20th of February. The symposium will kick off on the 19th with a poster and tabling session. And the intent of the symposium overall, when it was first started, this will be its ninth year actually, was to offer an opportunity on an annual basis to celebrate the sustainability work and commitment that we're doing at Iowa State University, and then to look forward at opportunities that we all can take part in and we can all challenge ourselves to, related to this overarching sort of theme that we have at Iowa State, that we're working toward a sustainable future. And so we kick off with this poster and tabling session that is able to really highlight some of the work being done research-wise, students, faculty, staff, tabling displays as well from a lot of student organizations, oftentimes community organizations too will join us. And then we have a keynote speaker that will be joining us on the evening of the 19th at 8 p.m., Nick Mullins, who is a fifth-generation coal miner from Appalachia. He has an interesting message about certainly understanding the concerns related to the coal industry and climate change, but also sort of reminding folks that there are livelihoods and social sustainability perspectives related to those who work and communities that depend upon that particular industry as well. Our theme for this year's symposium is engaging, enabling, and empowering our sustainable future. And so it's all wrapped around that. Now, a really unique part of the symposium that came into being starting in 2012 is Sustainapalooza. That particular piece of the symposium, students gave us feedback to say, you know, while we like all of these academic and learning opportunities, gosh, we'd really like to be more hands-on, more engaged, having more opportunities that we see directly impacting our day-to-day decisions and challenges that we can give to ourselves. And so Sustainapalooza was born. And so I am now going to turn it over to Paige and Leah to talk more about this year's symposium and some of the unique pieces of that.
Yeah, so I'm Paige again, and this year's Sustainapalooza event has a lot of really exciting aspects for students at Iowa State. So we break it up into three different rooms in the Memorial Union, starting in the Great Hall. And as you walk into the Great Hall, you'll be greeted by volunteers who will take you to what we call the Green Wall, and that's where everyone can make a pledge towards something that they're going to do a little more sustainably in their everyday lives. And then we have these things called GIY stations, which stand for Green It Yourself.
Instead of Do It Yourself. We think we're pretty clever.
And so those have interesting components from around the community and other student organizations that help students really feel empowered to do something right in the moment. So we have Wheatsfield Co-op making an eco-friendly cleaner, and we have the peer wellness educators at Iowa State University who are going to make some individually seasoned popcorn recipes that come without all the packaging. And we have the workspace and the Iowa DNR Waste Exchange who will be upcycling some home materials into magnets. And we also have a station this year for an ecological footprint assessment. So students can take a quick online assessment at the event and find out if everyone were to live their lifestyle, how many Earth's worth of resources we would need to supply that lifestyle. So those are our Green It Yourself stations. And then we also have a clothing swap. Do you want to talk about that, Leah?
Yeah, definitely. So the clothing swap, essentially, right now what's going on is in the East and West student office spaces in the MU, we have donation bins set up where students can go and drop off any gently used unwanted clothing that they may have. And for each item that they donate, they write it down on the sign-up sheet and they say, like, my name is such and such and I've donated X amount of items, so that when we have Sustainapalooza, they can come back and say, yes, my name is such and such, I donated X amount of items, and they'll be able to come into our little shop area and get items. So let's say, like, they donate two items, they'll be able to pick two different items from our clothing shop slash swap sort of thing.
Sounds like fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a unique part of the clothing swap is that it doesn't require you to have clothes to donate. You can also come, and we're supporting our food bank at Iowa State, the shop, student food bank run by students for students. Folks can bring two cans of non-perishable items or two non-perishable items. They don't certainly have to be in cans. And for every two items that are donated, you can swap one item. You can also do a donation, and the donation for $2, you can swap one item, or you can do three for five. We've got a deal going on. But all of those proceeds go to the shop student food bank. Mm-hmm. We have a unique piece that we're also encouraging folks to dig into their dressers and their closets this year. We are supporting the Iowa Workforce Developments Initiative that supports migrant agricultural workers that come into the state every year. And they're doing a long sleeve t-shirt drive. And they are hoping to collect 500 of them that they can provide to our migrant workers that are in the state right now. And so we are really encouraging people to dig into those closets and find those that we can support this initiative.
Wow, so lots going on.
Most definitely a lot going on. And we also have some other unique pieces related to, well, we offer refreshments at the symposium.
Yeah, one of the things we like to do at the event is partner with ISU Catering to offer things that have been locally sourced. So we look for local producers who it's a little hard to do in February in Iowa to find some fresh ingredients, but they've managed to do it. They're really creative, and so we have some really exciting food options as well.
Can you give an example of one of them?
So we have a pizza that's made out of locally produced pork, and then we also have a tofu that comes out of Iowa City. So it's a locally produced tofu, and we have some squash dishes because squash is one of those things that you can have all winter long.
And I saw something about a labyrinth.
Yes. One of the important pieces of sustainability, we talk a lot about environmental, economic, and social sustainability over the months, as you know, Ursula. And if we look at social sustainability, that incorporates also self-sustainability, taking care of oneself, being mindful, meditating, being able to sort of regroup. And the ISU Student Wellness Center has a wonderful opportunity that they offer through having an actual labyrinth that is portable, that they can take to different places that students then can then interact with. So they will be there, and they'll also have their wellness huts. Do you want to talk more about that, Paige?
And again, just to be clear, a labyrinth is not a maze.
Right.
No. Maze is something you get lost in.
Exactly.
A labyrinth is something that takes you somewhere and is a meditative experience as you take it
Yeah, so there's only one path on the labyrinth, so you don't have to worry about taking a wrong turn. You just follow.
And you will get there.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a very good point, yes. Mm-hmm. I think oftentimes folks think, it's going to be more stressful than it's going to be.
No, it's quite the opposite.
Exactly.
Anyway, I interrupted you. What were you saying?
No, student wellness has been a big part as we try to include social sustainability and self-sustainability in the event. So they'll be talking about how students can stay well on campus, mm-hmm. especially throughout these winter months. Mm-hmm. And also, they incorporate the peer wellness educators. So those are students who want to help their peers on campus stay well in a variety of different ways. So mm-hmm. physically, emotionally, and mentally.
And are you getting a lot of clothes with the clothes swap?
Yes. We just started putting them up on Monday, so it's only been a week. So mm-hmm. we are currently still in the process of taking donations.
So what kind of stuff are you getting?
Anything between pants and shirts, general short sleeve mm-hmm. things. I think people are
more out of season right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're excited about spring.
Right. Definitely. So, to go off of that, we just, as a little side note, we're going to be holding donations as well on Friday. Like, we'll have a table set up in the Memorial Union right by the campus bookstore and little convenience store where people can come by and talk to us face-to-face, learn a little bit more about the Green Umbrella and the event, and then hand off their clothing.
And okay. that will be this Friday. Next Friday.
Yes.
And then the following Monday.
The following Monday. So mm-hmm. there'll be three opportunities that mm-hmm. if folks just want to come by, and really anybody can, you know, help us swap. We certainly want this to be something that can support our community. Anything mm-hmm. that's left over will be donated to communities in need. We'll be working mm-hmm. with the Department of Natural Resources Iowa Waste Exchange Program, who's mm-hmm. very connected related to getting things to communities in need. But mm-hmm. when folks come to the tabling, they can also just talk to us about the event. Mm-hmm. And we have an interesting theme for this year's event. Leah, do you want to mention our theme for Sustainapalooza?
Sustainable.
Right.
So. With a focus on how we can help enable and empower people to embrace different aspects of sustainability in their everyday lives. And the beauty of it is that's what Sustainapalooza kind of tries to drive home every year, that idea of we can all make the little changes and do the little things that
make a difference.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Really enable people.
To every little thing makes a difference. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I've been speaking with Mary Rankin, Iowa State Director of Sustainability, and also for the City of Ames, and Leah.
Mm-hmm. Leah Gomez.
And
Paige.
And Paige. Okay, thank you so much for coming in. Would you say one more time where someone can find information about this?
Yes, absolutely. If you go to the Live Green website, which is livegreen, one word, .iastate.edu, we have information there. You can also get on ISU Live Green's Facebook page.
Yep, so it's just facebook.com/ISU Live Green.
Okay.
And we have an event on Facebook as well to keep mm-hmm. everybody very, very informed.
Yes. And the symposium is February 19th and 20th at the Union.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Both okay. evenings for both of those dates. Yes.
Okay. And this has been Local Talk. I've been your host for this past hour. Earlier in the show, we heard from Chris Martin, Jasmine Brooks, Violence Prevention and Green Dot Coordinator at Iowa State Wellness Center. And this being Friday, Dennis Hart gave us a roundup of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and local newspapers. Today's show was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Our theme song is Always Is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from the Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk airs at noon and 7 p.m. And at 7 a.m., as we're hearing right now. And you can also hear it at khoifm.org on demand as soon as we get the show up on the website. KHOI streams live at khoifm.org. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! And headline news coming up next, and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful, possible, and sustainable. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.